History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold, and they don't have to go untold, as long as we're willing to ask a few questions and then patiently listen as long-buried memories return to the surface. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Over the weeks ahead, we're going to hear some amazing stories from veterans in Washington, California, and Colorado who I've had the privilege of meeting recently. But for this week, I want to honor a very special veteran who really epitomized the spirit that we hope this program, Hometown Heroes, represents. We tend to focus each week on what these veterans were doing in their younger years during World War II, but in so many cases, these very same people who helped save the world in the 1940s came back from the war and built, literally and figuratively, the hometowns the rest of us got to grow up in. And chances are, if you grew up in the city of Shafter in California's Kern County, you knew the name Mert Weidman. Mert passed away this week, 6 months shy of his 98th birthday, and he spent almost all of those years in his beloved Shafter, where the number of lives he touched is incalculable. That really became clear to me 5 years ago when I first had the privilege of meeting Mert and sharing his story on Hometown Heroes. At the time, he was still a practicing pharmacist, making a four-hour round-trip drive each week to provide part-time help for his daughter's pharmacy in Fresno. And he kept that up until the age of 95. If you're a regular listener, you probably know we have a Facebook page where we post photos and videos of the veterans you hear on the radio. And as soon as Mert's memories hit the Hometown Heroes Radio Facebook page, the comments started flooding in. I want to share a few examples with you because it helped me understand just how big a difference Mert Weidman, the friendly pharmacist, had made in his hometown. Here's what Mike Harvey said. This man is a wonderful human being, and he probably saved a lot of lives here in Shafter. If you didn't have the money for a prescription, he would wait to be paid, and one of the nicest people I've ever met. Kobe Carrasco wrote, he was always so kind to me, even as a child. I mean little. I loved going into Stringham's pharmacy to see Mr. Weidman and have him look down from the platform and say hello and ask how I was doing. He was always quick to answer any questions and gracious to help if it was needed. Linda Serta posted, Mr. Weidman is such a nice man. I remember him coming personally to our home to see my mom and deliver a prescription when she was terminally ill. He was so kind to us and, as I'm reading, to many others too. He is a true servant of the Lord. God bless you, Mr. Weidman. I'll share some more of those listener comments later, but for now, let's listen to the man they're talking about. Mert Weidman's hometown of Shafter had a population of just about 1,300 when he was growing up in the 20s and 30s, one of five kids on a family farm growing alfalfa and cotton. And like many who grew up in Kern County during that era, he learned to toil out in the San Joaquin Valley heat, picking that cotton.
Not only in our place, but many other farms I picked cotton.
From the age of what? How old were you when you started?
Well, in the sixth grade, I was picking cotton, just a little bit, you know. But I was cutting grapes in the seventh grade. It was just typical of all the males in Shafter. They let out school early for the potato crops, and then in the fall, we were cutting grapes for raisins.
So hard work was no stranger to you.
Oh, I tell you, I was just one of many that doing exactly the same thing. And we didn't know any different.
Well, and you had company. You had three brothers and a sister that probably had to do the same kinds of things, huh?
Not my sister didn't, but she was older, quite a bit older than we were, but all four of us worked in the field.
And all four of you would go on to serve in World War II. And you were a pretty good football player, too, for the Generals.
No, there's about 13 or 14 of us went played football. For the high school, you go both ways, so you get pretty well worn out. But all of us were pretty good shape. We worked, you know, farm.
Yeah.
Worked out, and so, but that's the way it was, 13 players.
And there was a rivalry then that is still a rivalry now in this part of Kern County.
Between Wasco and Shafter.
And you had quite a moment in in that game 1 year.
Oh, yeah. We were always wanting to beat Wasco, and Wasco was ahead of us in the game, and they were about 4 points ahead of us, as I recall. And I broke through. They had the ball almost on our goal line, and I leaped up, and the ball went up in the air. I blocked the pass and went up in the air, and Ray Rexus, he's gone now, but he had Rexus Studio in Wasco in later years, good friend of mine. And anyway, he started running down the field, and not one person behind him, and he got down to about 30-yard line. Here we were going to beat Wasco for one of the first times, and he fell down and ran out of gas.
You deflect it. He intercepts it. He's running the other way. No one's going to catch him.
No.
And then he tripped himself and went down.
Yeah.
And you never let him live it down.
No, that's right.
Is that why he had to open his studio in Wasco and not Shafter?
Yeah.
But something happened, probably not long after that, actually. In December of 1941, your senior year, everybody seems to have a memory of this, December 7th, 1941. What was the first you heard of what had happened out in Hawaii?
On Sunday. I didn't know where Hawaii was. I'd heard about it, but I knew it was off the continent, but I had no, off California, but I, no idea, absolutely. Didn't know how many islands. I just didn't know anything at all about it. And that was on Sunday. And then on Monday, we all gathered in the auditorium, and they had the radio on and listening to President Roosevelt declare war. That was on Monday, December 8th.
So you, as student body president, and all your fellow Shafter High School students, you're huddled in this auditorium listening to a speech that people still listen to today and remember so vividly. And it was a day that really changed the world and certainly changed America's consciousness. What did that do to you to hear your president saying, this is what happened and this is what we're going to do about it?
Well, we were all excited to get into the war. You know, a lot of my friends were 17 years old at that time, most of us were, and a lot of them went right into the service, not graduating, told them they're 18 years old, and nobody really checked on it. So a lot of 17-year-olds went into the service claiming they were 18.
Did you have any feelings about that? Is that something that you thought you were
going to
get involved
in? No, I wanted to finish school first. I was fortunate to be able to graduate from high school before I went in.
And what about your brothers?
My brother was electrical engineer for Bell Telephone Company. They took him in and gave him a lieutenant job and put him in charge of a depot where they're shipping out ammunition up in San Francisco. And then my second brother, oh, that's a story in itself. Some smart guy in the government in 1940 decided that there's going to be a problem in the world and we might be involved in it. So they sent a member of the Pan American Airlines all over the world establishing bases for Pan American. They couldn't establish them for the United States, but they established them for Pan American. And then the British were being pushed all over Africa. So the government said to these different schools, junior colleges mostly, you take flying as a course at no charge to you. You became a pilot. And then in 1941, before the war started, my brother Clark, Pan American hired him to go to Florida to fly pursuit planes, fighters, from Florida to South America and then across to Africa, where the British military would take over. They could not use the military because the United States was a neutral country, so they couldn't use military pilots from the Army and Navy to fly those planes. Mm-hmm. So they paid these kids. My brother was paid $200 a month to fly these planes from... Oh, they just train them and fly them. No fighting. Uh-huh. And they'd fly, as I say, down to South America, across to Africa. And
how would he get back?
They'd come back in a C-46.
They flew fighters over and flew home on transports.
Yeah.
So your brother was involved in the war before America was involved in the war.
Oh, yes. And then they had the choice. When America entered the war, these fellows that were trained had the choice of becoming a pilot in the U.S. military or staying with Pan American and getting a reserve commission. So my brother got a reserve commission as a naval officer, and he elected to stay with Pan American. He became a first officer on a flying boat. In fact, he flew over Queen Wilhelmina on a Pan American flying boat from the United States to Britain, Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands.
Uh-huh.
And she
was his passenger.
That's right. It's interesting about how he got started. A farm boy from a poor family in Shafter, retired from Pan American after flying with him. He was a senior captain.
And as for you, you would go from Shafter High School to UCLA.
That's right. And then you had to sign up for either a military there at UCLA, either Navy or Army. And fortunately, I signed up for Navy. On December 6th, they told us we had to sign up and become an actual member of either Navy or Army by December 7th.
Or else you'd be drafted.
Yeah, you'd be drafted, that's uh-huh. right. And then we stayed. It was a V-12 program, and we always said it's a victory in 12 years or we fight. But they trained so many men in every field. It was quite a program that the government put on. So I got free education at UCLA for a while, and then one day my friend and myself were called into the office, and the executive officer said, "You've been picked to go into aerology." And we said, "What is aerology?" And he said, "Something to do with airplanes." But actually, an aerologist in the Navy is a meteorologist. And so we were with 150 officers sent back to UCLA to study, I don't know, 15 or 20 of us, enlisted men with 150 officers. And then when we completed that, we went to Notre Dame Midshipman School, just a small group. At that time, Notre Dame was taken over by the armed forces for the military training, but they also continued with the civilians there. Then after 90 days, at the age of 20, I became a line officer for the Navy, and the Navy people always call us the 90-day wonders, you know. From there, I was sent to Seattle, and then from Seattle, I was sent up to Alaska, out to Dutch Harbor and to Kiskanat, too, and then Point Barrow. Then I got back and I had orders to report to the Weather Central in Honolulu. And the reason of that was because of a terrible tragedy that Admiral Halsey got his fleet into in the Pacific Ocean. He lost three destroyers, 793 men, and it was just an immeasurable damage to the fleet. One of the worst disasters for the Navy. These typhoons would form at the equator and move north, northwest, and nobody knew where they were. We had no satellites, no way to determine where these storms were, and they cover relatively a small area. It's a big area, but it's relatively small to other storms. And so Admiral Halsey turned the wrong way and went into this typhoon that just literally demolished his fleet. They sunk three destroyers, I was saying, but the damage to the aircraft carriers. And so they decided they better have somebody up in the sky looking for typhoons, and so that's what I went out in the Pacific for, and I became the first Navy weather officer to fly in a typhoon on purpose.
On purpose is a key distinction there, and it sounds a little crazy, doesn't it? We're going to hear more about how that worked and what it felt like when we come back. Honoring the late Mert Weedman this week as the city of Shafter, California, mourns the loss of one of its hometown heroes. We'll be right back after this.